I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Roe v. Wade has been under attack since it became the law of the land almost a half century ago. Currently, more than 500 anti-abortion laws have been introduced in almost every state legislature in this year alone. In Texas, beginning on September 1st, abortions after 6 weeks will be banned, and any private citizen has the right to sue a doctor or anyone who assists a woman getting an abortion. The U.S. Supreme Court will hear a case this fall involving Mississippi's ban on most abortions after 15 weeks. This will be a test for Roe with the new conservative makeup on the court. Our guest attorney, Catherine Colbert, argued the other important abortion case before the U.S. Supreme Court, Casey v. Planned Parenthood, in 1992. While it kept abortion legal, it did allow restrictions as long as they did not create an undue burden for the woman. Colbert has written a new book with Julie Kay, and it's called Controlling Women. It's about their work for reproductive rights and how to preserve those rights without Roe and without the courts. Catherine Colbert joins us here in our Philadelphia studio. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. It's great to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Is Roe going to be overturned by this court?
I think so, yes. And if it isn't completely overturned, it will be so undermined that states will have much greater latitude to ban abortions at different points during pregnancy. The real question is, I've always said arguing in front of the Supreme Court is a lot like Sesame Street. You have to learn to count. The critical number is five. And currently there are six justices who are anti-abortion in one form or another. So there's nothing good that can come out of this court.
So Barrett replacing Ginsburg really shifts the court when it comes to this issue of abortion?
Yeah. I mean, the critical turning point was the election of Donald Trump and the fact that he had three justices to appoint to the court. And all of those three justices are more conservative than the people they replaced.
You and your co-author, right? We both knew the Supreme Court was not the place to go to protect, never mind expand abortion rights. We're tired of our movement banging its head against the court's marble walls.
You know, the strategy for years and years and years, you know, you can see the billboard and the signs all over. We're save Roe, save Roe, save Roe. Well, you can't save Roe anymore. And so we need to think about other ways to preserve reproductive freedom. In 1992, when I argued Planned Parenthood versus Casey, we thought that day was then. That is, we counted five votes on the Supreme Court in 1992 to overrule Roe. It wasn't an It was because of a last-minute shift by Justice Kennedy that that didn't happen. But I do not see any of the current justices taking that same view.
Well, let me ask you about a couple of cases. One is this Mississippi case. It will be argued before the Supreme Court. The Attorney General of Mississippi is saying the Constitution does not protect a right to abortion. What's at issue here in this particular case? And we're talking about most abortions after
15 weeks. So the time of the ban is less relevant than the fact that the ban itself is a direct attack on the current law. So under Planned Parenthood versus Casey, a woman has a right to have an abortion up until viability and thereafter if her life or health is endangered. This statute from Mississippi is a direct attack on this because it's a ban before viability. So it's almost irrelevant what the statute is. It gives the court a vehicle to totally undermine the current framework of the law. And they will do that, either by upholding it or reaching some modification that will enable states to greater restrict abortion.
We were talking about this before going on the air, which is it seems in the past a lot of these anti-abortion laws were about how wide a hall was or if a doctor has privileges or something about the woman's health. These particular laws, and we should talk about the Texas one, is basically going straight at Roe and perhaps Casey by association.
Well, again, it's counting. And the state legislators know as well as everybody else that they see at least five, maybe six votes on that court to uphold any severe restriction. So why not go for the whole ball of wax? Mm-hmm. And I think the point is, as we have seen through history, a whole range of different types of restrictions initiated by those who oppose abortion, whenever they think they have an opportunity to overrule the current law, they will go for the whole ball of wax. In the 90s, it was a constitutional amendment or it was bans on abortion. That changed after Casey to do these more health-based, I put health in quotes there, restrictions that really make abortion more difficult to obtain but don't prohibit it altogether. And now we're back. They count to six. They're going for the whole ball.
Well, speaking of six, Texas then bans abortion after 6 weeks. And even in addition to that, and I mentioned this in the introduction, someone can essentially sue a doctor or someone that might be helping a woman to get an abortion under this law, which it looks like it's going to go into effect on September 1st, I guess, barring some kind of stay.
Right. So obviously, the lawyers are going to go in and try to get a stay against this law. But I think this law is one of the most pernicious I've ever seen because it gives a vigilanteism a handle to go after not just the women who have abortions and the doctors who perform abortions, but anybody who helps them. Anybody
like
who
drives them to the
– drives them to the clinic, provides information, post. I mean, presumably you post information on the web and the woman reads it. Maybe you're in a better under this statute. It's really, really pernicious. And the problem is even if you get an injunction against the law, there's a provision in it that allows these vigilantes to go after doctors for up to 4 years if that injunction is ever overturned. So it's very, very difficult to see any good coming out of a law like that. And my view is within probably 6 months of the court ruling in the Mississippi case, we're likely to see as many as 23 states ban abortion, and I wouldn't be surprised if provisions like the Texas law are included in those bans.
Does that say, though, that the anti-abortion forces and organizations and individuals have been more effective than those who support abortion rights?
They have certainly concentrated more on state legislatures, which is where the whole fight will focus. And, you know, again, our side, save Roe, go to the courts, get injunctions. I mean, I was a lawyer who did all of this. So, you know, I can't complain too much about the strategy. It was effective. We've saved Roe for 40 years. But we now have to stop hitting our heads on these marble walls. We have to go and build the political power that's necessary to make change. And that is power in the state legislatures, power in Congress, power in state courts, and frankly, power in the streets, an active movement that is there to not only help women, but to build the support we need to make change.
Let me ask you, though, about Roe. Do you think it was not like wrongly decided, but that it was decided based on issues about privacy versus issues about I'm no constitutional lawyer, but, you know, using another part of the Constitution as a way to preserve the right to an abortion.
It was. There are downsides to that framing. The most important one was that the right was granted to the doctor and the patient together as opposed to the woman herself. Equality, in my view, would have been a better framework or liberty. But let's be real here. That's where the votes were. That's what Justice Blackmun could assemble as a coalition. There was earlier case law around contraception that was based on privacy. So it made sense for its time, and it worked very, very well up until 1992 when Casey changed that framework, gave greater latitude to the states to restrict abortion rights, and then we began to see lots and lots of incursions on women's ability to get abortions. And let me just add one more thing here, Marty, which is, who is affected? You know, rich white women are not affected. The people affected are poor women, who are disproportionately women of color, young women, teenagers, very, very problematic for them, women in rural areas who live far from clinics. These are the women who are disadvantaged by all of these restrictions. So it's never been good for them, and it's been even worse for them in recent years.
As the lawyer who argued for Planned Parenthood in Casey v. Planned Parenthood, do you feel like then you lost the case?
Well, it was a mixed review. We did much, much better than we expected. We, at the time, thought that the court would totally ban all abortion or allow states to totally ban all abortion. So the fact that we won the undue burden test was a surprise and one which has preserved legal abortion. But yes, it has given states much greater latitude to restrict, and a great number of women have been jeopardized as a result of that. The interesting part, of course, is that if the court had been good, you know, if we had had the fifth vote on our side, which was possible had if Hillary Clinton had won the election, then I think Casey could have been interpreted in a way that would have been much more protective of women. But the fact that we don't have those votes made a difference.
Since you're here and you mentioned privacy, and I just want to make sure our listeners understand the Griswold case, and this is the case that Roe was based on, the idea that I believe what is married women were or married couples were allowed to have birth control, right? Contraception.
That's right. There was a challenge to a Connecticut law that prohibited anybody but married couples from having access to birth control. And the court said, well, actually, it prohibited all birth control. Right. And in Griswold, the later case said only married couples could have birth control. And in both instances, the court used privacy as a way to say, this is a protected interest. This is something that all people ought to have access to.
Your book is about many things, a lot of this history, but also this title, Controlling Women, that from your perspective, a lot of these abortion laws are about controlling women and sex and women and having babies. Can you expand on that?
Sure. So our opponents want to characterize this issue as one of religion, one of the protection of women's health, protection of fetal rights. It's not about any of those things. I mean, let's be real here. This is about the ability, state regulation of who is appropriate to have sex, with whom and how and why. And all of those things are really tied up in the question of whether abortion is legal. I wanted to believe that those other arguments might be controlling. But the more we go through this, and the history has shown that this really is about misogyny. This really is about not letting women make decisions for themselves, not letting women make decisions that affect their families. And it goes much further than just abortion. Because reproductive freedom, in our view, is defined very broadly. It's about not just whether you have a baby or have an abortion. It is about the conditions that are necessary to make having children possible. So we talk a lot about in the book remedies that help prevent maternal mortality, remedies that improve childcare, remedies that provide greater access to contraception, because we want to make sure that not only do you have a right to make a decision to have an abortion or not, but that the conditions in which you decide whether or not to have children are available and supported.
And that's Catherine Colbert, our guest today on Radio Times. She's written a new book with Julie Kay. It's called Controlling Women, What We Must Do Now to Save Reproductive Freedom. We've been talking about the future of Roe, and it looks rather uncertain. We have much more to talk about after this very short break. We got lots of people that are joining our conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking with Catherine Colbert, the attorney who argued before the U.S. Supreme Court in Planned Parenthood v. Casey, credited with saving Roe v. Wade, although she was just mentioning with some restrictions. She's the co-founder of the Center for Reproductive Rights, former director of the Athena Center for Leadership at Barnard College. And we're talking about her new book, co-authored with Julie Kay, titled Controlling Women, What We Must Do to Save Reproductive Freedom. And you can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. You mentioned poor women and rural women, and I was reading this, or maybe you wrote that 89% of counties in this country, there is no abortion provider.
That's right. And even in states, some states have, two or three or four or five abortion providers for huge land masses. And problematically, a lot of these states, where there's no provider, only a few providers, are contiguous to each other. And so that you have huge land masses where you have very few providers. I mean, I think we cite in the book North Dakota and South Dakota and Montana, there's five providers. And that's a landmass the size of Ireland. Mm-hmm. So this is very, very difficult for many women to obtain procedures. And it's interesting in our view because if you rethink how you provide abortion services, if you think about medical abortion, which is essentially allowing women to take pills, that problem could be solved by creating places where women can obtain the medication. And if we, you know, currently there's 900 abortion providers in the entire country, but there are 9,000 minute clinics all over the place, you know, what I call docs in a box, which could provide medication abortion if we think broadly about how to provide this service.
But it's so interesting. And Roe has been under attack for, you know, since 73, since it became the law of the land. And yet, and I'm looking here at Pew Research, their latest research, 59% of Americans think abortion should be legal in all or most cases. 39% illegal in all or most cases. So, I mean, obviously people are pretty hardened in their positions, but nonetheless, you see that there is majority support for abortion.
Right. And as we see in many things, there's majority support for lots of progressive issues, but not the political power it takes to enact the laws necessary to preserve those rights. And that's really where the right has done such a good job, because they have not only built political power in the states, but they now control reapportionment, and they now control voting rights to keep the political power in the minority. And so it seems to me the number one thing we know is if we are about to lose Roe, quit depending on the courts, mm-hmm. start thinking about building political power, do everything you can to do that, and not just in what we think of as the traditional blue states, but in places where the anti-abortion people have had the majority over the years. We have to think long term about how you build political power in the South, in the mountain states, in places that, you know, have had democratically elected officials over the years, but we've lost that ability in recent ones.
25% of women have had an abortion.
That's right.
I guess that would qualify as a common procedure.
Very common. Over almost a million a year. And they're safe. That's the important thing. This is safety is not guaranteed, but it certainly is. There's no significant health risk as a result of abortion. It's safer than childbirth. But the important part is that demonstrates that this really isn't about health care. Okay? Because if it was about health care, we would be moving to expand access. We would be moving to find ways that women could get it more easily and in safer ways. It's about controlling who has children and when you have children and with whom you have children. And it's not just, you know, heterosexual relationships. Okay, so lesbian and gay families, trans families, all of whom should have access to reproductive freedom.
It's so interesting when you hear the people opposed to the COVID vaccine. And yep. They talk about, you know, it's my body. I get to decide what to do, what to put into my body. It's an argument that I think has resonated with a certain segment of the population. They tend to be conservative. They tend to be Republican.
And libertarian.
What do you make of that?
Well, in the old days, when I first started working in this area, libertarians were pro-choice. Remember Barry Goldwater?
I do.
Barry Goldwater was pro-choice as a libertarian and was somebody who believed that, you know, the government shouldn't interfere in male bodies and female bodies, and therefore supported abortion rights. But that changed around the 90s, when this kind of political coalition built from those who opposed abortion. And today, it does make me laugh, though, every time I hear one of these total crazies talk about the right to their body.
My body, my choice.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. My body, my choice about vaccines, but just about vaccines.
So if Roe gets either overturned or somehow shrunken, if right. I can use that legal term, what will happen? I mean, obviously, it'll go back to the states. What happens when abortion becomes illegal?
So in our view, it's likely that as many as a third of the states will take either immediate action or laws that are already on the books will take effect, which means that about 23 states could ban abortion or so make it so difficult to obtain them that they are readily unavailable in those places. About 17 states will permit abortion. They have some laws on the books that guarantee rights that are equivalent to Roe as a matter of statute. And the other states will be somewhere in the middle. And I think the important part is we have to really be strategic about how we block those efforts in the purple states and how we fight back in the red states in a way that is loud and is just doesn't let them do this surreptitiously. I mean, let's look at Texas, for example. They passed this law banning abortion at 5 weeks and giving vigilantes their say without much fanfare. I mean, it was weeks later before this hit the national news. We can't let that happen. We have to vigorously oppose our state legislators, even the ones that are in the minority, have to start standing up and fighting back and making news and making sure that if those legislators who oppose abortion are going to do so in contravention to the beliefs of their constituents, they need to pay the price.
But are we talking back alley abortions? I mean, the kind of procedures, abortion procedures that were very common before Roe?
Probably not. That's the good news. Medication abortion, which allows women to terminate a pregnancy by taking a series of pills, is available. It's much easier to obtain than a back alley surgical abortion. But those women who need medication abortion will need help to get it. They'll need information to get it. They may need money to go to a safe state. They may need resources to travel. There's lots of impediments to those women. So my guess is we're going to see two things. We're going to see some women unable to get abortions like that, what is occurring now, and that will increase because the number of states that ban will increase. But at the same time, we're also likely to see women turning to self-medication abortion, taking the pills on their own, finding them on their own, and terminating pregnancies, and that
on their own,
and that themselves. To me is really problematic because women need support, and or at least the ability to feel like they're supported, even if they want to do this on their own.
Let me just quickly reintroduce our guest. It's Catherine Colbert, and we're talking about abortion. She argued Planned Parenthood v. Casey before the U.S. Supreme Court back in 1992. We've been talking about the fact that it looks like the future of Roe v. Wade is uncertain and what that means for abortion and for women. And you can join us. I should add, she's also got a new book called Controlling Women, What We Must Do Now to Save Reproductive Freedom, co-authored with Julie F. Kay, who wrote, interestingly, about Ireland in this book. And again, you can join us. Any questions or comments, we do want to hear from you. RadioTimes@WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. What do you think about the future of Roe? Do give us a call or a comment. Patricia says, I'm old enough to remember the pre-Roe days. I don't know where to begin. The moves by the hard right to control women's reproductive lives and their hypocrisy alarm and infuriate me. They know full well this won't end abortion. For wealthy women, abortion will always be an option. And these extremists do seek to outlaw birth control. I am heartbroken for my young nieces. We haven't really talked much about birth control, but in some people's minds, those two are joined together.
They are. And certainly the anti-abortion people, once they ban abortion, will also move to ban some forms of birth control because they believe that is an abortifacient. So, yes, birth control is in play. The good news is there are efforts to increase the availability of birth control that have been very successful. It used to be you needed a prescription for the pill, for example. You needed a prescription and you had to go to a doctor to get that prescription. Today you can go to doctors excuse me, via telemedicine, and that has improved access. In some states, you can go to the pharmacist and request the pill. And now there's efforts to make the pill available over the counter, which will dramatically increase access. So that's all good news. And new long-lasting forms of contraception are available. That's good news as well. The morning after pill is available. That's good news. But the reality is those who oppose abortion also oppose birth control, and we need to preserve these freedoms for everyone. And they're not, you know, one size fits all. Birth control is definitely at play, and we need to preserve those rights.
But does that make sense to you, the idea of being opposed to abortion and birth control, knowing that birth control prevents unwanted pregnancies?
It does not make any sense. I mean, the whole point is that we agree that preventing unintended pregnancy is the goal. I would love to reduce the number of abortions because there's fewer unintended pregnancies. And in fact, that has been true in recent years. But those who oppose us don't see it that way. Yeah. And so they oppose both things.
Is that because it's women and sex? Women having sex?
Well, it goes back to our thesis here. This is not about health care. I mean, if this was about health care, maternal mortality, right, would be a huge target of support on both sides of this issue. Black women are dying of childbirth at much greater levels than white women. This is not a good thing. And if this issue was about health care, we would be moving to remedy the disparities in our health care system that affect women of color in particular.
Health care for all, that kind of thing? I mean,
exactly.
Universal health care?
Either universal health care or certainly greater access to health care, cheaper health care, ones that provide full range of services. Remember, abortion is excluded from most health care policies today. So, again, we want to make sure that abortion coverage is included, but all coverage, and think about women's health in a holistic way. And in the book, we detail a variety of policy changes that would improve those things. But let's get back to our thesis, which is what the reason people oppose abortion and birth control is because this is about controlling who women have sex with, when they have sex, how they produce families, whether or not families are the kinds of families that are having babies are okay. And this is not about really health care or religion or fetal rights or any of the other things.
You call for undoing the Hyde Amendment, which prevents the use of, what is it, Medicare funds or federal funds, I guess, to pay for an abortion for a low-income woman.
That's right. And the Hyde Amendment actually has been replicated in many different ways. It affects the Medicaid program, but Hyde-like amendments are throughout federal law now. And, you know, women in the military can't get abortion coverage. Women in the Peace Corps, anybody who depends on the federal government for their health services are prevented from funding. The good news is for the first time in 40 years, President Biden submitted to Congress a budget that did not include the Hyde Amendment. A budget without the Hyde Amendment passed in the House. We will see whether that can pass in the Senate. But this is the first time in 40 years we've seen progress on this issue. And again, eliminating the disparities based on race, based on sexual orientation and or, you know, who you sleep with is really, really important and ones that we must make changes in.
Well, in fact, you and your co-author argue that, it's time for the abortion rights people to work with Black Lives Matter and the LGBTQ community, that there are, I guess, what, strength in numbers, or these are shared values and beliefs?
I think they're shared values, but most importantly, we won't win political power unless we're unified. And political power is important for all of our issues, because just to think that the antis will stop at prohibiting abortion is naive. They will, you know, they're working first on voting rights, then they're working on gerrymandering, then they're working on abortion rights, then they're going to come after trans people. I mean, all of these things are intimately related because those who have political power oppose us all. And so we need to be unified to fight back. And one of the things we propose in the book is a 50-year strategy or a long-term strategy to pass a new constitutional amendment that protects all people to exercise their reproductive freedoms and gender justice and racial justice.
A lot of comments here. One from Noel. Even predominantly Catholic countries now allow abortion. We're going against the tide. The U.S. is going backwards. Do you agree?
Absolutely. In the book, we tell the story of Julie tells the story of the case she brought in Ireland, which had totally banned abortion, required every woman to go abroad to get a procedure. She brought a case before the European Court of Human Rights and won at least limited rights. And you know, 10 years later, we saw a change in the Constitution in Ireland that permits legal abortion. And that's true for most of Europe. That's true for lots of different parts of the world. They're going toward more rights. We're going downhill. I think of it as this kind of just the X factor. And we need to change that. There's a lot we can learn. And the interesting part, in my view, is that it's that women in Ireland, women in Argentina, women in Poland, activists everywhere have been very, very vocal. It was an in-the-streets fight, at least in Poland and Argentina, for example. And that has really changed how people view this issue, and I think that's an important thing to remember.
Almost up on a break here, but, you know, as I mentioned, something like 25% of women have had abortions, and people can keep their private decisions to themselves, but I wonder if more women spoke out about their abortions, whether that would change either the law or people's opinions.
Well, I think one of the reasons that this is a difficult issue is the shame is attached to facing an unintended pregnancy. So the fact that so many women have been affected is important, but it's not important unless they act on that. And that's, to me, if there's one message, what can you do to save reproductive freedom now is get active. It's no longer time to sit on the sidelines. It's no longer time to bemoan the success of our opponents. Get active and do whatever it takes to make change.
That is Catherine Colbert, our guest today on Radio Times. We're talking about abortion. She's got a new book, co-authored with Julie May, called Controlling Women, What We Must Do Now to Save Reproductive Freedom. I should add, we have had many debates, the other side, on Radio Times as well. We wanted to talk to her because of her role as an attorney, the attorney for Planned Parenthood v. Casey. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with reproductive rights attorney Catherine Colbert. And again, she's got a new book called Controlling Women. Let me read some comments here. Harry says this is about people imposing their religious beliefs on others. Ideas about when life begins at conception or viability are fundamentally religious. And I don't think it's fair to back and forth these ideas of others. Roe already has restrictions. Let me read a couple of more comments. Tris says, if they ban abortion, it will be government takeover of health care. And what will be next? Contraception. If men got pregnant, abortion would never be an issue. Brian says, I'm frustrated with this conversation. It's so black and white with no nuance. There has to be a middle ground. Let me put that to you, Catherine Colbert. I mean, is there a middle ground where you think people on the two sides of this issue can come together? And maybe it is contraception. I don't know.
Well, I wish that were true. I mean, obviously, both sides believe in reducing the number of abortions. Those who oppose abortion want to do that with a hammer and prevent women who need them from having them. My side believes we want to reduce unintended pregnancy. So, yes, contraception arguably should be a middle ground. It's not. Because those who oppose abortion also oppose certain forms of birth control. You would think maternal mortality would be a middle ground. It's not really. So I think part of the problem is that this issue has become the wedge issue within the Republican Party, and one which brings together a whole coalition, the libertarians, those who the evangelicals, the Catholics, et cetera, who are part of their base. And now I have to say brings together many of the hate groups, the people who are kind of steeped in anti-women philosophies. So that is a big part of their constituency. So I don't see a middle ground happening. For years, people thought funding was, the cutoff of Medicaid funding for abortion was the quote-unquote middle ground. Well, yeah, it's a middle ground, but it seriously disadvantaged women of color, poor women, young women, and that's a problem. So I think we're less likely to see that. And as long as our politics remain so starkly red and blue, it's going to be very difficult to do.
But in a more perfect world, if we could agree on contraception, that might be an area we could make some progress.
I would think. I mean, greater access to health care for all people should be a middle ground, right? I mean, who's against people having more health care, right? But unfortunately, these issues don't play out in quite that way. And part of that is the difference in saliency about this issue. The those who oppose abortion rank it really high on their list of issues they care about. Those who are pro-choice, those who believe in greater access to reproductive freedom, are less concerned about it in the hierarchy of issues they support. I think that may change should the Supreme Court do what I think they're going to do, which is to reverse Roe and Casey.
Here's a question from Casey, a different Casey. Is eugenics illegal? Why can't that principle be used to argue that interfering with people's health care in general is illegal?
Well, I think obviously eugenics is illegal. It does occur, unfortunately, but not to a great degree. But for example, sterilization has been used in a part particularly targeting women of color, women who are disabled. Has implemented eugenics in that way. And I think the important part and what we talk about in the book is that the right to abortion is reciprocal, right? The right to abortion is to terminate a pregnancy or to carry a pregnancy to term, no matter who you are. That's universal. You should have a right to make that decision in either direction, and therefore eugenics would be problematic in whatever world we're in.
Here's Ellen's comment. Could you acknowledge that there are those of us who are pro-vaccine, well-educated, liberal, and progressive, but who still cringe at the thought of abortion as solely an issue of my body, my choice? There is another human whose life is being sacrificed for such choice.
Well, let's just say that the question of when life begins, when a pregnancy is considered human, is an issue that has vexed mankind for generations and generations. And there's no one answer. For this caller, perhaps.
And it is conception.
It is conception. For other people, like in my religion, I'm Jewish. In my religion, life begins at birth. The reality is that there is a wide disparity of views, and I don't think when that is happening, I don't think our law ought to adopt one view over another. That is not appropriate, and that's what the Supreme Court found in Roe.
With viability, right?
Well, what they said is we're not going to determine when life begins. That's a question that has never been answered. The government should not be making that view. Now, those who oppose abortion want to enact into the Constitution a human life amendment that would say life begins at conception for everyone, even if that's a different view. And I think those people who have abortions have different views of these things. Or they may think they are taking a life, but it's more important that they preserve their own. So again, all of these things are very complicated and nuanced. They're not easy. There's no one right answer nor one right viewpoint. And I think the difference on the vaccine question, however, is that you're not only making a decision for yourself, but for other people.
For the larger community.
For the larger community. In abortion, you're definitely making a decision for yourself.
There are people who talk about, that abortion is murder, and that so that if you are the doctor or who carries out the abortion, you are then a murderer. I would think if you're the woman who wants the abortion, you would be in that point of view an accessory to a murder. How do you struggle with that?
Well, first of all, I just don't believe it. I've met most people who have abortions are doing so because it is the best thing for their life at that time in their life. So there is no nuance there. They've made a decision because it's appropriate for them. And that's where I think it's important that our law leave it, because there's no way that a legislator ought to tell a woman what's best for her life at any particular point. But more importantly, I think we need to get to a point in which there's respect for a wide range of views. And some religions don't want to acknowledge that. They don't want to acknowledge that there's religious views that support abortion rights. To them, religion is their religion. And I used to say all the time, you know, people would always say, I want exceptions in the law for rape and incest. Well, to me, the exception I've seen in operation always is rape, incest, and me. Hmm. And even those who oppose abortion have abortions. So let's be clear here that we're not just people, when faced with an unintended pregnancy, make choices that's best for their lives.
You're saying to sort of believe something without having to do it is one thing, but when faced with that difficult decision, they might contradict themselves in their decision.
Right. I mean, my clients would always talk about the people who'd be outside protesting and then bring in their daughter or their cousin to the clinic. You know, sneaking in the back door so no one would see them. Yes, this is a nuanced question, and what's right for any individual in any stage of their life has to be respected.
Here's a comment similar to our previous comment from Leslie. I'm not crazy. I support vaccines. In the large majority, women have the choice before contraception with birth control. Adoption is an option. I disagree with the host. I'm a woman, and I do not consider limits on abortion a way to control women. I mean, that's sort of the heart of your argument here, which is that sort of boiled down, abortion is about controlling women.
Right. I mean, the reality is whether or not you have a child determines many different aspects of your life, when you can work, how you form your families, whether or not you can participate equally to men in society who don't have to make those same choices. And so to me, what we're talking about here is equality, the ability to decide what's best for you in your life and actually activate that. We knew in the days before abortion was legal that women were circumscribed in the workplace, that they were circumscribed from equality in all different forms. And what's at heart here, I think, is our view of gender roles and what's appropriate for women and what's appropriate for men. And what we argue in the book is that gender roles, the traditional family, is at the heart of the anti-abortion movement. The traditional family meaning a heterosexual couple having children, sometimes two, sometimes many more. But non-traditional families, or families in which, you know, the male isn't the breadwinner and the woman isn't the supporter and caregiver, those families, for the most part, believe in choice. And I think that's an important distinction.
Here's a comment from Thomas. Not all of us want to control women. Life is sacred through all generations. A comment from Betty. What message does this send to rapists and victims of rape and incest? It's like giving perpetrators of violence against women a green light. Anything you want to add to that?
Well, certainly violence against women is a huge problem. We argue in the book that we need to tackle that problem as a part of the conditions that women need to create in order to choose families appropriately. Whether or not you have a children should not be dependent on violence, and eradicating violence is really critical. Too many times in my lifetime have I met the 11 and 12 and 13-year-old girl who's been raped and or a victim of incest and can't get an abortion, and we needed to move to help them. And I think, yes, eradicating violence against women is part of how we achieve equality, and that is at the heart of this issue.
You mentioned some of the ideas that you have for how to address what we've been talking about, and I'll just list some of them. Healthcare for all, which we mentioned, reduce maternal and infant deaths, more and I guess better contraception, better sex education, affordable child care and pre-K. We're getting some glimpses of that. Family-friendly work benefits, more fairness for pregnant workers, reduce sexual abuse and violence, and then join this global women's health rights community. I mean, that in a nutshell going forward is what you and your co-author envision.
Well, yes. And in addition, though, we also have a whole chapter on what we need to do to preserve abortion rights. rights. And I think that really goes to looking at state statutes that provide omnibus protection for the right, that gives women the ability to obtain procedures. And in my view, one of the most important things is improving access to medication abortion and eliminating the criminal penalties that attach. So, for example, in all these states that are going to move to ban abortion, I think we ought to make a really big deal about the fact that some of those women could be held criminally liable if they have abortions. That never happened before Roe. But now those who oppose abortion are including that in the agenda and criminalizing women and people who help women should not be on the agenda.
And do you think that would change people's minds? I mean, just say what? You know, who knows, right?
Right. Who knows what will change people's minds? I think the only question is who has the political power to make sure that the playing field is level. And until we get to that point, minds aren't going to be changed.
Here's a comment from Mary. I can't help but think that if abortion is banned, a lot of people who take it for granted will suddenly go, wait, what?
Well, that's right. And I, you know, to me, one of the biggest things I face is people say to me, well, they can't really do that, can they, when talking about the Supreme Court? And the answer is yes, the Supreme Court has the power to eliminate the right to choose abortion. They are likely to do so in one form or another. And we need to really pay attention to the fact that we are about to lose sacred rights, ones we've taken for granted for generations, at least two generations now, and begin to get active enough to change that occurrence.
If you were going to argue this Mississippi case before the U.S. Supreme Court, apparently they're going to hear it in the fall, what would your argument be against Mississippi?
Right. The only argument really is that it violates the current standards of Planned Parenthood versus Casey because it's a ban that affects abortions before viability, that there's no current reason to change the law. No circumstances have changed, and principles of stare decisis should control.
Precedent, right.
That's right. The fact that Roe and Casey have been repeatedly reaffirmed over 40 years should be enough to preserve the right. Unfortunately, this current court doesn't believe that. They're very selective of when they apply principles of stare decisis. And so, in my view, again, I think you got to argue this case not just in the court, but in the court of public opinion. And people have to understand that their rights are in jeopardy. It's too late to change the Supreme Court. Okay? We lost that fight. Okay? That would have been voting for Hillary Clinton. That didn't happen. Okay? And so now that we are at the precipice of losing rights, we need to build the political power in the states, in the state legislatures, in Congress, in state courts to preserve rights going forward.
About a minute left, but I'm interested. You include some of the testimony from Justice Coney Barrett, the new justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. You know, obviously they can't directly answer some of these questions about how they would rule, but anything that she said or didn't say about abortion that illuminated her thinking?
Well, so she is of the Scalia mindset. He opposed all abortion. She said his views are my views. I think that said it all. But in addition, I think her life circumstances, the fact that she is in this very strict religious group that is very gendered, and, you know, men are controlling, women are supporters, that is a very good indication of her views on this issue, and the fact that she is willing to overturn precedent, in my view, is very, very problematic. So I don't see her as one of even the potential votes on our side of this. If anyone could potentially vote with us, it would be Roberts, but I'm not even sure he's there.
We have to leave it there. Catherine Colbert, thank you for coming in. Thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome. And again, she is co-founder of the Center for Reproductive Rights, co-author of this new book, Controlling Women, What We Must Do Now to Save Reproductive Freedom. Go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under Programs there for more information about the program. You can always download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show was produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray-Bessler. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you for joining us.